Blog Talk Radio.
I was a hard drinking sinner with blood on my hands. I was a hard drinking sinner, a gun in my hands, drinking 40 pounds for dinner till I met a big man. And the man said, how do we do?
Freaks out there. This is Ryan, and I'm coming at you live from Tornado Alley here in Richmond, Virginia. We were supposed to get bombarded by a hurricane this weekend, and that never happened, which I am very thankful for, but I think Mother Nature was like, we're not through with you yet, because we had like three or four tornadoes touched down here in the Richmond area. I spent almost 3 hours in a parking lot waiting for my daughter to get out of school. And I drank a nice big, those Bubba water, those big Bubba water glasses, whatever, or glasses, but containers that keeps the water really cold. Well, I had one of those big ones, one of those big Bubba deals. And I was like, I'll just drink this up, 'cause I was really thirsty. And I was like, it shouldn't take that long. I was wrong, because it did take that long. It took longer than that long. So I sat there probably for the last hour and a half having to use the bathroom. And they don't take too kindly of to people getting out of their cars and using a bathroom on school property. So I had to suffer in silence, I guess. But I made it. Everyone made it. Everyone's safe. Everyone I know is safe anyways. I know the tornadoes did do some property damage to some places in Chesterfield, which is south of Richmond. If you happen to hear me drinking something, I'm actually drinking coffee right now, which is probably a big mistake, so it'll more than likely keep me up all night. But our house is probably, it says it's 66 degrees in here, but it feels like it's 30. Angie likes the house really cold, and it's not very conducive to hosting a radio show when your teeth are chattering. So I'm drinking coffee to warm me up. Yummy. Good stuff. Let's see here. Well, I talked about the hurricane earlier, and like I said before, where I live was spared, and I'm very thankful because I don't know how I would survive dealing with having a newborn baby and no power. That's why I feel very sad and sorry for the people who are living in the Carolinas who have to deal with that shit, because I would go batshit crazy. And I realized that, you know, we're very lucky up here to have missed that happening. And I just want to give, you know, prayers and, you know, and just support for all those that are dealing with the hurricane and the damage of the hurricane. Luckily, you know, it was a category 5 for a while out in the ocean, and I think it went down to like a category 2 maybe. But, you know, still a lot of damage down there, a lot of flooding. And it just, luckily, it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but still pretty bad. And, you know, if you want to, you know, donate money or help people, you can always donate to the American Red Cross and the Humane Society, you know, down there. You know how many people's pets are stranded or were left behind looking for new homes because their owners left them behind. I know there are a lot of people down there, they're going into shops and looting shops because they feel like they can. Because, well, it's the right, they can do whatever they want because there is a flood. That's not, you know, don't do that. I mean, I realize people that are doing that aren't listening to my show right now, but, you know, it's just not, you don't do that. You know, we realize that you're going through a lot right now. We're behind you 100%. We just, you know, be smart, be safe, and you'll bounce back. So we have a lot of events coming up this week, or in the next month. One event coming up this week. We've got we have a joint investigation with Transcend Paranormal this weekend, which it was supposed to be last Saturday, but the hurricane kind of messed that up. The hurricane that didn't come up kind of messed that up for us. We're going to be investigating Scotchtown and Hanover Tavern. Scotchtown is where Patrick Henry lived for a while, and Hanover Tavern in the Hanover Courthouse area is where Patrick Henry practiced law. See, if honestly, I've just caught myself here. If you want to think of a good drinking game to play, every time I say the word you could drink, take a shot. You'll be drunk in about 15 minutes. Well, I did it again. That wasn't on purpose either. But yeah, we've got we've got a joint investigation at Hanover Tavern and Scotchtown. Tickets are $75. I'm not sure how many tickets are left. We did the show last week. We actually did the show live from the Hanover Old Stone Jail in Hanover. There are only 15 tickets left. Excuse me. So I'm not sure how many tickets have been sold, but I'm pretty sure it's not sold out yet. So if you want to get tickets, it's this Saturday, September 22nd. It's from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. in the morning. 2 and 2 of two haunted locations. I've investigated Hanover Tavern several times, and I've pretty much always gotten great evidence from there. And I've investigated Scotchtown once, but again, got some pretty compelling evidence from there. And there are two very historical locations, so you can't go wrong at either of them. October 13th is we have our every year we go to Evergreen Cemetery, which is an abandoned African American cemetery here in Richmond, and we place flags to honor the vets who are buried there. We've been doing this for 4 years now, and we try to pay for the flags out of pocket, but it's just to clean up for the cemetery. You need to discover more graves. You're discovering more soldiers that were buried there, and it's getting harder and harder to buy the flags. The flags, right now we have over 200 flags on Veterans Day, and so we kind of need help. So we're going to have an event at the cabin on 360 to raise money to buy the flags for Veterans Day. And speaking of which, on November 10th, which we realize is not Veterans Day, but it's on a Saturday, we're going to go out and distribute the flags, place the flags at Evergreen Cemetery. And for those who are in the area and would like to attend and come out and help us, we will host you at the cabin on 360 for a free investigation that night. So, if anybody wants to come out and join us and do something good for your country and honor the vets who were buried at Evergreen Cemetery and largely forgotten, we'd love to have you out, and we'd love to host you up at Cabin on 360. So that's it for the events we have. Our guest tonight is Austin Maynard. I'll get him to give me the right pronunciation when he comes on the show. He is a paranormal investigator out of Ohio, not Michigan, like I had originally thought. I kind of fucked that up. So looking forward to talk to him. I believe he is on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and put him on the show. Hey, man, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Sorry for the long introduction. I know you're sitting there.
Oh, no, it's all good, man. I'm just sitting here watching the Monday Night Football game, so I'm entertained either way.
Awesome. Who's winning?
Chicago right now, 10-3 at halftime.
Damn. Hey, well, they got Khalil Mack, and he was doing good against Green Bay the first half of the game last week, and then, you know, Aaron Rodgers happened, so, you know.
Yeah, that was disappointing, but Aaron Rodgers will be Aaron Rodgers, unfortunately. But he has
on one leg.
He already has a strip sack tonight.
He does? Well, good.
Yeah, he's got one already in the first half.
Yeah, I wish he had gone to the I wish he had gone to the Lions or, you know, the Redskins. That would have been cool. I think you're a Bears fan.
I'm glad we got him, man. I am a big, big time Bears fan.
So you know what it's like to be a suffering football fan like I do.
Yeah, I have lived through the pain and sorrow for many years. The last team I was actually proud of, we lost in the Super Bowl. And then, yeah, Jay Cutler era happened, which was sad. And then, now we're in the Mitch Trubisky era, and I'm excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think football is better when teams like the Bears and the Cowboys, I mean, like the Cowboys, but teams like the Redskins, the Bears and Packers and all those teams are good. I think Smash Mouth,
yeah,
cold
the storied franchises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like football in the snow and the rain and stuff. That's when it gets good.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you're out of Ohio.
Yeah, I'm out of Bryan, Ohio.
How'd you become a Bears fan? Living in Ohio.
Well, my dad has been a longtime Bears fan ever since the '84 season. I grew up a Bears fan, so.
So you know all about the Super Bowl shuffle and all that.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Hell yeah. That's awesome. Well, at least you're not a Browns fan, because then you'd be really depressed.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. The Brownies are looking pretty good this year compared to other years. I mean, at least they haven't lost every game so far.
Exactly. They tied one, so
yeah,
they probably should have won. They should have won yesterday.
Yeah, but that's what happens. You make a mistake, you release that guy who makes those mistakes, and then hope for the best.
Well, now he's a Patriots problem, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they put a lot of commitment into Josh Gordon. I think they wasted a lot of time and money with him, especially considering he was suspended for 2 straight years. I mean, they still paid him.
I mean,
I don't know if they paid him or not, but I mean, they still like kept him around. And now they're going to give up now that he's able to play. I don't get it, you know, but whatever.
Exactly. Like, what did he do to make them want to trade him? And you could be the best player in the world, but if you're not on the field, then you're really not really worth anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, New England, they have a way of getting best out of players. So watch him have his breakout year, you know,
stay
out of trouble and everything he's supposed to do in Cleveland. So I know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll
football.
See. Yeah.
But you see, you know, you start talking football like an hour later. Oh shit! I should have asked some ghost questions.
All right.
So how exactly did you get into the paranormal?
Well, I mean, I use the same story every time, but it's kind of one of those things like. I've always been interested in the paranormal. Like, you know, as a kid, I would rent books from the library, like about Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and shit like that. And UFOs in particular too. But, you know, I really started getting into like hauntings and paranormal stuff, like ghosts, when, you know, ghost adventures started becoming popular, I guess. And so I was kind of like every other person out there that was like, oh, you know, this is awesome. Let's do it, you know. But I never really got into it until several years later when after Nick Groff quit Ghost Adventures, actually. And I went on his first, like, tour event that he held at Bobby Mackey's. And I ended up getting pushed from behind down in the basement. And that was, like, my defining moment to where it was like I needed to find out more. And then on top of that, you know, back in 2009, I suffered a sudden cardiac arrest, a lethal arrhythmia. And I was I was legally dead for about 7 minutes. So I went 7 minutes without oxygen in my brain. So I had kind of an experience with death, and I was able to recover from it because I was actually in a coma for 3 days, and they didn't know if I was going to be able to function after I got out, and they actually thought I was going to be in a vegetative state. They were ready. My mom said they were ready to harvest my organs and shit. So, like,
oh, wow.
It was close, but yeah,
that's crazy.
But I persevered through it. And so, now I feel like I have a closer to connection to death than most people do, I guess. And, so I try to entice that into how I investigate.
Did you notice you had any mediumistic skills, or could you talk to spirits after? Because a lot of times people have like these near death experiences, and they can all of a sudden talk to ghosts, and they, you know, did you have any psychic abilities that appeared after you had your cardiac arrest?
Well, I will say I don't know if it's necessarily an ability, I definitely don't know if I had it before the accident because I didn't, like, pursue ghost hunting at all before the accident. But I have been able to visually see them a lot, even though I can't – like, it's happened very vividly. Like, I can see them, like, as if they're another person, but it's trying – I have attempted multiple times to try to figure out how to communicate with them. I just can't do it. I've tried, you know, verbally. I've tried telepathically, I guess. I don't know. I've tried different ways. I just can't. I mean, they react to me apparently because, you know, I'll try to like walk closer sometimes and they'll step back. So I know they can see me. I don't know. It's frustrating as an investigator because I try to keep a skeptical mindset. And so like as an investigator, you're trying to capture that. But when you're the only one who sees it, it's kind of like it's extremely frustrating because it's like, what good does that do me? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. It's just as frustrating for those who can't see them, and you're with someone like yourself, and I'm there, and you'd be like, "Oh my God, there's a person sitting right here." Well, where? He's right there. Can't you see him though? So it's just as frustrating for people who can't see them as it is for people who can see them.
However, I have had an experience where I actually saw a spirit at a hospital down in Maysville, Kentucky. I'm not going to say the name of the hospital because I don't want to get in trouble. we went in there, and I kept seeing this little boy like in a old hospital garb, like following us around. He had like an Amish bowl cut. It was weird. And I remember seeing him so vividly, and he would react to me and stuff, but, he disappeared one time, and I actually walked over to the area where I last saw him, and I started getting hits on my meters. So, I mean, I don't know if that's any kind of validation. I mean, it is to me, I guess, but
yeah,
it's interesting to say the least, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very cool. Like I said, it's not all the time that I see something like my friend will see something and then I'll get a confirmation on an EVP. Like, oh, there's a little girl, and then you'll hear something on an EVP of a little girl. So it's happened before, and it's great when that happens. You know, so was the pushing, when you got pushing the back, was that your first paranormal experience, or had you experienced anything before then?
Honestly, I've experienced some things before that. That was like my defining moment, you know what I mean? Like, everybody in the field has their one defining moment that tells them, like, wow, this is real. And that was mine. But I did have some weird moments at my house when I lived just south of Bowling Green, Ohio. There would be times where me and my roommate would be sitting in the room. I owned the home, and it was my friend. He was just living with me. We'd be sitting in the living room talking or watching TV or something, and we'd hear all the cabinets and drawers being opened in the kitchen. And then we'd go in there, and everything would be wide open. And then, you know, we'd close it all, and then, you know, a couple, I'd say probably like 15, 20 minutes later, it'd all be open again. And it just, that was probably my first, like, weird experience. But, was my defining moment.
Yeah, because once you get, like, physically touched, Although it is hard to explain cabinets and drawers opening up by themselves, but you still once they touch you and you know you get that connection with them, it just feels more real than anything else.
No, absolutely, and the crazy thing is that I have never been, you know, handled like that before. I guess physically. I mean, after that moment, like I've had some experiences where I've been like tapped on the shoulder or brushed on the back of my head or something, you know, stuff like that. But to actually get physically moved, that's never happened to me before. And I've never been manipulated to that extent ever since either. So I don't know if it's something about me or what, but. Yeah, I mean, it was just a once in a career experience so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna say who'd you piss off down there? Jeez.
I don't know. It happened right in front of Nick too, and I mean, it was crazy because, like, I felt my back was up against the wall, you know, and we're all in this big circle in the room of faces over in Bobby Mackey's. And we were doing a spirit box, and it kept saying stop, stop, stop through the spirit box. We shut it off, and then all of a sudden, I feel two hands on my back shove me forward, like, with force. And I go, you know, flying forward, and like, I was ghost face for, like, I could not believe that happened, because I turned around, I was ready to, like, block somebody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he just pushed me.
Yeah, exactly, and you realize you're up against the wall, so you're trying to...
Yeah, exactly.
The
That's
wall
what scared me, is, like, I turned around, and I'm facing the wall, like, oh, shit.
I think this. Oh shit! Did Nick have anything to say about it? Did he even notice it?
I think everybody saw it happen, but I don't know. You know, I don't know. I know Nick saw it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't remember exactly what he had to say about it, but I know he talked to me about it afterwards.
Yeah, he's probably thinking that's just typical Bobby Mackey stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff he's seen out there.
Yeah.
Do you remember feeling anything before it happened? Did you feel like, were you scared, or did you feel like anything, or just a normal investigation?
Not really. I mean, that was my first ever investigation. It was my first ever experience, so I really didn't know what to expect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was just in it for the ride, and... I don't know, sure enough, it happens to me, I guess. Some of them were theorizing that it was because, like, I was the biggest guy in the room next to Nick, and I don't know. Because, I mean,
well,
I'm a solid
that could
dude,
be.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you never know you never know the reasoning behind that stuff when it happens, you know? So after you have this experience at Bobby Mackey's, you know, what comes next? Do you start a team, or do you, what happens next paranormal journey?
We joined up with a small team out of Fairfield, Ohio for a little while, but I ended up kind of running the show myself, you know, like she was the leader of the team, which I respected, but the fact of the matter was I was making all the bookings, I was doing all the talking, building all the connections, gathering all the equipment, building the team. You know, I was literally doing everything on the team, and she was, like, trying to take credit for all of that. And so I just eventually got frustrated enough, and I just flat out politely told her, like, look, this is a business thing. It's nothing against you. I just feel like I want to go in a different direction. And, you know, she got pretty upset about it and all that stuff. But it's just drama, and I don't pay attention to it. So then we joined. We formed Creepy Cincinnati Paraforensics in 2015. And me and my wife and my partner, Mike Ring, he currently runs Creepy Cincinnati Paraforensics because we were down in the Cincinnati area at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we just took off for a while. I mean, we were, you know, investigating all the crazy biggest locations you could think of, and we were getting into places that not many people could get into and stuff, and it was awesome for a while, and we even ended up securing the old Higgins Fort School down in Higgins Fort, Ohio, which is southern Ohio. We had that open for investigations for about 8 months, and that's widely known to be one of the most haunted locations in the state. And nobody had ever been had access to it legally. So, you know, when the owner gave us the keys, it was awesome. We even got to meet Nick and Katrina and Elizabeth Saint from Paranormal Lockdown. And
oh, wow.
And that whole crew, because they came and filmed an episode for season 3 there. So that was awesome. And so it really gave us an insight, too, on how they kind of do things, which, I mean, it gave me a lot more respect for the show, and they definitely have a lot of credibility,
yeah.
I think. So, but then, unfortunately, you know, my wife and I got into a situation where we needed to move up to Northwest Ohio near both of our families. And so we ended up moving here to Bryan. And crazy thing is that, you know, I start going to some of the buildings around town. And everybody in town, it's a small town, so, like, everybody knows everybody, and everybody knows everything, you know, kind of thing. Well, word got out that I was a paranormal investigator because I built my team through Facebook. I put an ad out there, you know, on the yard sales and stuff, and got a lot of attention. And then, you know, people around town got word of all that. And so they started telling me, oh, yeah, my building is haunted as hell. You know, I have activity left and right. And I got this old abandoned grain elevator over here and an old 1867 train station. And now, and I also own a church that is built on a graveyard that's now a brewery and has all sorts of religious and spiritual items from around the world, you know, just mashed into this former church. And actually, it's still used as a church, so it's even crazier. The energy inside of that place is nuts.
And, very spiritual.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's a culture war in there, man. It is crazy. But we, I mean, we have now 8 buildings in our network. And so I created Haunted Brian Investigations just to not only help bring some tourism and money into the local economy here in Brian, but also help share with the world the interesting haunting of this town. Because, I mean, how many people or how many actual haunted towns do you know of that you can just investigate? You know what I mean? That you can just pay and investigate.
Well, I mean, unless it's like in the, like in Nevada or places like that, or like Carson City or the Wall Show Club,
oh, exactly.
Places like that, you know.
Well, like,
those
yeah,
like
not
haunted
a ghost,
ghost
town.
Towns I know about.
Yeah, and this isn't a ghost town though. This is an active town with just a lot of history, and that history is being saved in the walls of these buildings and on the grounds of these buildings, and it is just waiting to be told. Each building has
I know I know firsthand how hard it is to get the word out about locations. Because, you know, they have locations like Bobby Mackey's, Waverly Hills, that have a reputation. And people want to go out there. They want to go to these locations because all the famous ghost hunting teams have been out there. But, you know, I run a location here in Richmond. It was built on the site of a Civil War battlefield, very active location. But like you said,
what is that?
Just getting the it's well, it's called the Cabin on 360. It was built on the site of the Battle of Bethesda Church. We've had, you know, full body apparitions. We've seen countless. We've heard countless EVPs. Doors slamming. People have been touched,
wow.
Scratched. People have left one of the houses that are there. In tears, vowing to never come back. There, people have seen shadow figures there.
Wow.
I mean, it's just a whole bunch of different stuff that we have been documenting for about almost 3 years now. And we've had people come out, like, you know, Dave Spinks and, you know, people like that come out and, you know, spend the night out there. And we've had, he himself said he's got a house in Indiana. That like I forgot the name of the house, but it's supposed to be really haunted. He said he'd stay out there, but he couldn't stay a whole weekend at the location I'm working on. But I mean, I'm not here to talk about that. I just want to just say that, you know, I know what you're talking about when it comes to trying to get the word out about a location, you know, that no one's heard of. Because I mean, I never heard of Brian, Ohio. Before,
yeah.
And I was thinking you said Brian paired up. I thought it was named after a person. Named Brian, when you told me that's what you want to talk about. So that shows,
yeah.
You know.
No, it's been a difficult path, but I've faced it before. I mean, when we were running the Higginsport School, I mean, I was doing a lot of the marketing and such. And I mean, the Higginsport School already had a very big reputation as being one of the more haunted locations that nobody had access to. So, I mean, it made it a little easier when we were finally able to open it up. But with Brian, it's been a difficult road. However, word is starting to get out about it, especially with this event that we're holding on November 10th. Like, that's going to be a huge event, and, I mean, it's really going to put us on the map.
What event do you have coming up on November 10th?
Well, November 10th is going to be our, it's what we call our Hunt the Town event. Basically, we are going to have 6 celebrity investigators come out. We're going to have Dalen Spratt from the Ghost Brothers. We're going to have Sherry DeBenedetti from Ghost Hunters. We'll have Chris and Mike from the Tennessee Wraith Chasers. We will have Greg Lawson, who's the paranormal detective. He has like 30-plus years of detective police work experience under his belt, and I guess he gives a really good speech and stuff, which is awesome. I'd love to hear what he has to say. But then also we have Janet Hughes from the RIP Files coming out too. And then I got several, you know, guest investigators coming out to help handle the public and everything. But it's supposed to be a great night. But basically they're going to – each celebrity is going to do a little 15-minute, you know, speech and then do a little Q&A for a half hour. And then the VIP ticket holders will get to investigate with the celebrities. We'll go to five different buildings throughout the town, and each celebrity will get to investigate. Like, each person will get to investigate with each celebrity at each building.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And how much are tickets?
Like, so that, well, the general admission, which is just for the meet and greet, is $40. It actually includes the meet and greet and the lectures and Q&A. So those are the cheap end tickets, but the VIP $100 tickets are they're $100. But that includes the meet and greet, the lectures, and the investigation of the town. Is that expensive?
Still, $100. No, I'm just saying it's still $100. You get a lot for – a lot of times people, you know, charge $100 and all you get to investigate is a building, you know.
Yeah.
Or $75 and all you get to investigate is a building. For $25 more, you can investigate a whole fucking town. So I'm pretty – you know, you can't – the price isn't bad at all, I don't think. Plus you get to, you know, meet all the celebrities and stuff and –
and
talk to
them
and get your pictures taken. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the people that pay the $100 get to literally hang out with and investigate with each and every celebrity. So, I mean, you'll have a chance to meet with them, see how they do things, and actually get to interact with them in real time, you know? Like, it's not just TV.
Yeah, if I wasn't placing flags at Evergreen Cemetery on November 10th, I'd be tempted to ride out there myself and investigate the town.
I heard that you were doing that. That's awesome, man.
I appreciate that. You know, trying to do our part.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Man. So, yeah, definitely. If if you're in the Ohio area and you want to have a good investigation, is there – when you planned it out, were you concerned about it – about people being burned out from all the ghost hunting and stuff, you know, from Halloween the month before? Was that ever a concern for you guys when you started planning the event?
You know, honestly, no, because, like, this is an event, honestly, it's right after Halloween. It's like, you know, I think it's like the weekend following Halloween, not like it's the weekend after the weekend after Halloween. Yeah, so I figured there would still be plenty of people that maybe would hold off on the Halloween events just to go to this event. You know what I mean? I mean, this is something that has never happened in Northwest Ohio. I mean, I guess you could consider the old Paulding Jail, I guess, the closest thing, because they sometimes have the Tennessee Race Chasers out there. But, I mean, they charge way too much. It's ridiculous. It's like $150 a ticket or something like that. It's crazy. And you only get to meet two of them.
To meet them, you can charge if you're on TV. It's just
They were reasonable with me, and you know they were willing to work with me because it was my first event, and they were trying to help me out and want to do business in the future. So I mean, I got them at a reasonable rate, and I'm excited. I think this is going to be a huge event. Everybody in Northwest Ohio is excited. Everybody in Bryan is ecstatic about it. You know, I got the chamber. I got people. I got businesses around the square, like, selling tickets for me. Like, it's nuts.
Did you ever run it? Do you ever run into any, like, anybody, like, into town that was against what you're doing, or are they all pretty much on board?
I have yet to talk to somebody who's against it. Everybody that I've talked to either was kind of just like didn't really care about it, or they were real big believers in it. And most of the big believers are actually the building owners, which is awesome. So, you know, it's people that are open to the idea, at least, you know, and willing to do it and make a little money on the side, you know, just open their doors up. Why not?
Yeah, and they're probably heading for it themselves.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. And a lot of them have. That's the crazy thing.
Well, you live in a haunted location long enough, you're probably bound to have something happen to you.
Oh,
or work in a paranormal location long enough. So when you go on investigation, you know, let's say you do this investigation and Brian, do you how do you think like a person's attitude affects an investigation?
I think it has a huge effect. Like, for instance, if you were to go out, if you and your wife just got into a fight, like an argument, and then you were to go out and ghost hunt and you had that negative mindset already, you're already pissed off kind of thing, I think that's going to affect your night, because I think the spirits will kind of sense that vibe from you and kind of stay back. You know, I don't think anybody wants to be around a negative person in general.
Yeah.
So why would they want to do it after death anyways, you know? That's one of the big things I say. So I try to go in with, like, either a neutral mindset or a positive mindset just to draw whatever I can in. You know, I try to experiment with different mindsets and different methods and different things like that. So I'm a little out-of-the-box investigator.
Well, I mean, you kind of have to be to try different things and just see what sticks, you know. I mean, with you know what we do, there's no like rule book, I guess, when it comes. You know stuff which students would do as far as investigating is concerned. But if you want to try different experiments out, you know, as long as it gets answers.
Well, what I think, honestly, I try to approach everything with as open of a mind as I possibly can, because who are we as investigators to say that anything works or doesn't work? Because what are we determining to be activity, I guess? I mean, this is all theory. 100% of this is theory. The only fact in the paranormal field is that millions of people around the world are experiencing things. So we have to go into it, all investigations, with the mindset of, you know, what can we do to initiate communication? And some people will go in with pendulums, or, you know, some people choose to do Ouija boards. I mean, that's their thing. I don't recommend it, but I mean, I am okay with everything when it's done the right way. You know, like when you're talking about a pendulum, maybe instead of having somebody hold it, maybe put it on a tripod with an extension and just have it sit somewhere and try to get out answers that way. And stuff like that, you know.
Well, you're talking about Ouija boards. Why do you think Ouija boards have gotten such a bad reputation? Because, I mean, I know there have been cases of demonic stuff, or, you know, bad spirits coming through, but isn't there a chance of that happening, like, any time you go on an investigation? If used properly, you know, are Ouija boards that bad?
No, and I don't – see, Ouija boards, I'm questionable about in all senses, actually. Because, one, I think they are too easily manipulated, whether we do it subconsciously or not. You know, I think our minds can trick our bodies to do certain things, like move a Ouija board thing without us even thinking that we're doing it. Like, I think that's possible, but I also, on the other side of that, think when used properly and in, you know, the right circumstances, yeah, I think Ouija boards can be very effective in communication with the afterlife. However, I think that, you know, when you use a Ouija board, you are not only opening up a door to whatever's in that location, but you are opening up a door for literally anything to come through. It's kind of like, you know, when they say you shouldn't put two mirrors facing each other, it's kind of like that. You know, whatever, I mean, whatever is out there is able to come through at that point. So I don't know. I think it has good potential, and I think it has the potential to be very negative at the same time, but I question a lot of things. I question everything. I'm very skeptical about almost everything in the field, to be honest.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, I don't use Ouija boards. I mean, again, you know, I used to do it with my friends when I was a kid. You know, my sister got one for Christmas, one of those Parker Brothers Ouija boards. I'd go downstairs in the basement, and we'd be with my friends, and we're like, who's the coolest person in the room? And, of course, we all try to spell out our names, you know, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, but I guess the same thing could be said about pendulums too, because it's pretty much the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
They're using spirits to move this pendulum back and forth and stuff.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, really all methods of communication are similar in that sense. I mean, I guess when you kind of direct it, I don't know what makes a Ouija board more dangerous than like a Wonder Box or something, you know. I always ask that kind of stuff, but I guess the only thing I could possibly say that it might be the fact that you know, a portal or whatever, if you're using like a hacked radio, like it's just using local, you know, it's very localized. I don't know, you know. It's hard to say.
That's the thing. You don't
say,
know.
But...
We don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
It happens to be that people have had bad experiences. Maybe the fact that, you know, when, I guess, what's that movie, The Exorcist, you know, and it's based on a true story, and the person just happened to be using Ouija board like a couple of days before. So, you know, that got a reputation from that. You know, the person would be using a pendulum or something. Would have that made a big difference or what? You know.
Well, and I mean, there have been cases of, you know, attacks on people even after not using a Ouija board. You know, just even after just regular investigating. So I don't think it's just contained to Ouija boards. I think
it's all over the place.
I mean, there's it could be anything, really. But I mean, we just are kind of learning as we go and.
Yeah,
we as investigators have our own experiences, and we learn from those experiences and decide what we will and will not do again in the future.
I think a lot of times the public, or you know, popular opinion is like, "Hey, the Ouija board's bad, so it's got to be bad."
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't use it on my investigations or anything. I just thought it was funny, just the reputation that it has. And, you know, and everyone's, oh, the Ouija board's so bad. I mean, is it that bad, or, you know, are other, you know, forms like dowsing rods or pendulums, are they just as bad?
Yeah. No, it's always,
so
always a good question.
So when you go on investigations, and like we're talking about being attacked, how do you protect yourself when you go on an investigation?
I'm very minimal, I'll be honest. I mean, I have a couple of charms that I wear around my neck at every investigation that I guess I hope help me. You know, I got like a St. Michael's pendant, or I got two St. Michael's pendants, and I got an African Zulu mask pendant that, you know, is supposed to protect the front barrier of the house from evil spirits. So I'm kind of open to many different things, and I guess I'm hoping that they help and they mean something to me. So maybe that's all it takes, you know. But other than that, I don't do any praying. I don't sage myself, and honestly, I've never had anything come home with me. So
yeah, I think you're right. What you're saying, as long as you believe in the trinkets that you have, that they will protect you, then they will protect you. If you don't believe in them, if they're just there, then they won't do anything.
Yeah, and I mean, even, and I wouldn't even say that I fully believe in them, you know, because I'm skeptical about it. I mean, I just say I hope I do, hope they do, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, they seem to be working well for you so far, so that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what is the scariest piece of evidence you have ever captured? Besides
Ooh.
Being pushed against, you know.
The scariest piece of evidence?
Yes.
Well, I have seen I guess the craziest thing that I've actually seen and not captured was I actually saw a door, a latched shut closet door that had been latched shut all night. As I'm winding up camera cables at the end of the night, it, like, the knob turns and the door just opens all the way. And that was the craziest thing I've ever, like, witnessed. But I think the craziest thing I've captured some incredible EVPs. I haven't captured a whole lot visually, to be honest with you, just because I don't rely so much on cameras as much as I do, like, intuition, my experiences, audio. Because I'm more of the type of person that likes to find out answers, not try to just capture evidence, you know. But I did capture, I don't know if you ever heard of a place called Thornhaven Manor.
Yes, I have heard of that one.
Yeah, there was one time I was at Thornhaven Manor, and I was using one of the digital dowsing SLS cameras. I bought it a while ago, and I was using it that night, and I started to get a few different, you know, figures on my screen. And I asked a question, and it said to me, "Hi, I'm Lizzie." And it said it in a really high-pitched voice, like a little girl would say it.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is that Lizzie was the 2-year-old daughter of Thornhaven, like the owner, Simon Powell. When he built the home, like, he had a 2-year-old daughter named Lizzie who died under suspicious causes in the house. And the fact that I was able to capture her saying, "I'm Lizzie," like, clear as day, that just blew my mind. And that was pretty freaky at the time.
Yeah. That's a pretty amazing piece of evidence right there.
Yeah, it was nuts. And, I mean, we went to Hillview Manor, too, and I know there was one EVP I remember, too. The guy called himself the Motorcycle Man, and it was really clear. He just said, what's your name? And he goes, "Motorcycle Man." And that was clear as day, too.
Wow,
that's
right there.
Yeah, and
we use
recorders that have, like, immediate playback, so we do, like, live playback, like, on the spot burst sessions kind of thing, so,
So,
I mean, to hear that right on the spot, it was crazy.
Was that during a public investigation, or were you with your team?
It was just my team.
Wow. And to get that, and to, you know, that they're the person actually named Motorcycle Man, is pretty amazing stuff.
Is there actually a guy named Motorcycle Man?
I don't know. I thought you said there was.
Oh, I don't know. I really have no idea if there really was, but it was just an interesting capture because, you know,
if he's calling himself that, I guess there was someone who at one point called himself Motorcycle Man.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if you know anything about Hillview Manor, but I think at one point it was like a mental institution.
Hillview, I'm pretty sure it was. Don't quote me on that. Again, I don't have. Yeah, I'm guessing
for
that
some period of
it
time,
was at
I
one
think
point.
It was a mental institution.
Wasn't it a retirement home at the end, or was it like?
Yeah, yep. It was a retirement home, and people could, with dementia, you know, I don't know, you know.
Yeah. Well, all right, we'll just say there was at one point a guy who, at least in his own mind, referred to himself as Motorcycle Man.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
Still, that's pretty freaking awesome. Part of the pun there.
Yeah.
So, what do you think is the best thing about being part of the paranormal?
There's never an end in sight.
Oh,
and so
true.
It's just, it's a never ending journey.
Mm.
And you're always just looking for the next amazing thing to happen. And you just, it gives you hope that after death, there's more. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
I think everybody wants to know that, everybody has that question in the back of their mind at least, like, is there more after death? I mean, that's what religion is all about. That's what, you know, that's the whole thing. That's what everybody lives by, is there life after death, whether they think about it or not. Because if you are religious, like if you're Christian, you think about going to heaven or hell. And, I mean, you live your life by that.
That's true.
So,
we always, all.
Yeah.
We have that question in the back of our minds. We don't know what happens next. Although, even as investigators, we don't still know for sure what happens next. We just know that there is something that happens next.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, it gives us hope at least. I mean, nothing's definitive, obviously, but I think we all, as investigators, are searching for that answer, and that's why we do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of us, I guess. There are some out there that are not, but I mean, I think we are all in this for the same thing. We're all in it with the same ultimate goal, and I think we need to form together more often than we are currently.
Yeah, a lot of times people forget. The reason why we do this is to help people and to get answers, and not really to help ourselves.
No, absolutely. It's just a shame, like, what this field has started to become. It's all about attention and, you know, trying to get the most likes, the most views, or whatever. It's like, I see just the most ridiculous evidence put out there all the time, and it's almost a shame to me, because, like, people that are actually, like, legitimate, credible investigators don't put out that stuff. Like, pictures of orbs and dark, grainy pictures with a darker spot. Like, you know, like, what am I looking at kind of thing. And I think that's a shame to real investigators, because we, you know, I mean, I don't even consider orbs evidence anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so minute, because it can easily be debunked by anybody.
True. I mean, a lot of times people take pictures like on a a rainy day or something, and like an old a dusty room, and they see these orbs flying, and of course it's dirt.
Yeah.
But they try to Yeah. I mean,
even in the off chance that it actually is a spirit energy, like, how are you going to present that to anybody? Like, you cannot present a picture of an orb or even a video of an orb and definitively tell somebody, like, that is a spirit energy. Prove me wrong. Like, it's going to be easy to prove it.
I mean, it's easy to prove that. And, you know, but it's got something I deal with, you know. I know people are always going to put out evidence, you know, that they're really behind, even though it may be, you know, total bullshit. But we're about to run out of time.
People get excited about little things too, and I mean, that's great if you're an amateur and you get excited because you think you captured something great. I mean, that's awesome. But
yeah,
I mean, just expect that if you're going to post that out there for everybody, then expect the criticism, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to quench anybody's like excitement to put their evidence out there. You know, if you have good evidence, then definitely put it out there for sure. But
we as investigators should just try to put more solid evidence out. Like, when we actually do put evidence out, put something solid. Like, don't just put every little piece of nothing that you get.
Yeah.
You know? Like, put some serious
stuff
out
there
if you're going to present it. Yeah.
Yeah, because people, you know, you were talking about Orb earlier. The team came out to the cabin and set up night vision cameras in a back room over there, and it was middle of winter. It was December. And so the windows were closed, and you had a camera facing the window, and you could see an orb go from the outside, from the house next door, come around and go through a closed window and come towards the camera. So kind of evidence is compelling because the window was closed.
Yeah.
And there's no way for a bug or a dust or anything like that to get through the a closed window. So like that, I could be like, okay, well, that's something.
Like, there are some compelling pieces. All I'm saying is that, like, even if you have the most compelling orb video ever, like, you go and show that to a skeptic, what's the first thing that they're going to tell you that is?
Dust. Oh, yeah, dust.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying
is,
like, we need, as investigators, need to find some evidence that is convincing. Like, it is proving skeptics in the other direction. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I try to, like, bring public to our investigations sometimes. You know, like, I'll just bring a random person or something from Facebook. Just be like, hey, come out and experience what we do. Like, this is real kind of stuff, you know? And people have crazy experiences when they're with us.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, I know a lot of people do watch Ghost Adventures or Tennessee Wraith Chasers, but you can watch these shows all day long and be like, oh, I believe in this stuff. But until you have an experience yourself, you don't know for sure.
Exactly.
You know, oh, like, oh, I watch Ghost Adventures. I love it. Man, they get some really scary stuff. But, you know, it's you're being armchair. It's like, you know, trying to experience what it's like playing football by watching the Bears. So you don't, you know, you're sad when they lose, but you don't have the full experience of actually being a professional football player and doing what they do. At least with this, you actually have the opportunity to experience what these people are experiencing in real life. And once you experience it, that's when you become hooked.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the people that are the biggest skeptics are the ones who have never had an experience.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's always
what happens to you. Yeah, it's got to happen to you. You know, it happens to you. But there are people who have had parallel experiences and still don't believe it. Oh, it's got to be some. They'll try to think of the most insane explanation that is not logical at all, but it's not paranormal, so they think it makes sense.
I've had some crazy ones told to me before. I did actually. There was one time we actually captured like a mist on camera. One time, I will say that I forgot completely about this, but some guy tried to explain it to me as like a warm pocket or like a cool pocket of air in a warm room that traveled out of one door and into another. And like intelligently moving, it was not an orb. It was like full human-sized mist on camera. And they tried to tell me it was like a cold pocket of air in a warm room, just creating a mist. It's like a contained and all that stuff. Like, really?
Yeah, just listen to yourself for a second. I mean, come on. Yeah. Seriously. I mean, are you really gonna be that like against what we're talking about? That you have to make up some science shit. You know.
Yeah,
and this warm pocket of air doesn't have anywhere else but this location. Oh,
exactly.
Well, I think we're actually not on air right now. Our time ran out about 5 minutes ago.
Oh.
So, I just realized that. I was like, oh, shit, all right. But I want to thank you for coming on and talking to me tonight. It was definitely a fun conversation. And,
yeah, man,
definitely.
We'll have to do it again.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I have a lot more stuff to talk about, for sure.
Absolutely.
Good luck on your event on November 10th.
Thank
you. Tell you what, let's have you back on sometime, and you can tell sometime maybe in December, and you can tell us all about the event, and I'll do my best to advertise it for you. Send me all the information you can find you have on it, and I will put it on my pages and stuff and try to help you out with that.
All right, brother, I appreciate that.
All right, man. I appreciate you coming on and talking to me. Have a great evening, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, brother. Later.
Bye.